I'll tell you what, the hardest instrument in a band to play, it's second fiddle. To play second fiddle is difficult, and Joshua played it very well. It requires a lot of character to be humble, to perform lowly tasks, to stay in a subservient position. Joshua was Moses' servant, and he went from a high position of leading the Israelites against the Amalekites, winning the war, and now had to be returning to play second fiddle to Moses. Joshua passed that test. He passed it with flying colors. He was able to become humble once again. You and I also have to pass that test. We have to find a way to be humble. There's a humility test for all of us sooner or later, and we have to pass it like Joshua did. Joshua not only showed his humility, but he also showed his trustworthiness. I don't know if you remember that Joshua went up with Moses to the mountain of God. Let's take a look at that in the book of Exodus, chapter 24, dropping down to verse 13. It says this, "Then Moses set out with Joshua, his aide." I'm reading this from the, I think it's the New International Version. It might be the New American Standard. But anyhow, Moses set out with Joshua, his aide, and Moses went up to the mountain of God. Now again, here's Joshua. He's subservient. He's the aide to Moses. They're marching up to the mountain of God, but only one person was going to go in the presence of God. He said to the elders, "Wait here for us," this is Moses saying this, "until we come back to you. Aaron and Hur are with you, and anyone who involved in the dispute can go to them." In other words, if you have some kind of campus, you know, dispute among all these Israelites, you go to Aaron and Hur. Verse 15, this is Exodus 24, verse 15. "When Moses went up to the mountain, the cloud covered it, and the glory of the Eternal settled on Mount Sinai. For 6 days the cloud covered the mountain. On the seventh day the Eternal called Moses from within the cloud. And the Israelites in the glory of the Lord looked like a consuming fire on the top of that mountain," just like a giant red glowing fire. "Then Moses entered the cloud as he went up to the mountain. He stayed on the mountain." Now he and Joshua were going up to the mountain. Joshua went up evidently part way, and Moses went the rest of the way. Now what's Joshua do? "Moses stayed on the mountain 40 days and 40 nights. That's from the New International Version. So Joshua was left alone on that mount for 40 days. What do you do? He's by himself, and he didn't have anybody else. It was just Moses and Joshua that went up there. He stayed waiting. He didn't give up. He didn't think Moses died. He didn't say, "Well, I'm tired here. Well, you're not going to get here. I don't have anything to eat either." Who else had to fast? Who else had to be without food, without water, 40 days and 40 nights, if that's a literal expression? It could be just an expression a long time. But who else did that? Joshua did that halfway up the mountain, or partially way up the mountain. He waited for Moses. Meanwhile, what happened in the camp down below? What were the Israelites doing? They said, "Well, Moses isn't coming back. Make us a god so we can see what the god looks like." And so Aaron, you know, said, "Well, give me the silver and gold." And they made these the golden calf, as you know. And the people started going into reveling, sexual reveling and orgies in the camp of Israel, while Moses was up receiving the Ten Commandments. So Joshua's left alone. He stayed faithful. He stayed solid. He stayed with his faith, with his determination, with his endurance. And then we have this strange little situation here in Exodus chapter 32. Exodus chapter 32 beginning in verse 17. Now when Joshua heard, now they're coming down the mountain, Moses and Joshua, okay? They're coming down the mountain. Moses is carrying what? The stones of the Ten Commandments, okay? The stone of the Ten Commandments. And now when Joshua heard the sound of the people as they shouted, he said to Moses, "This is the sound of war in the camp. I hear something. I think there's a war going on. You're shouting and screaming, and I think there's some kind of battle down there." But Moses said to him, "It's not the sound of the cry of triumph, nor is it the sound of the cry of defeat, but the sound of singing is what I hear." Now, evidently, Joshua didn't hear too well, right? He heard something. He couldn't distinguish it. He didn't know whether it was a war or what. But Moses said, no, it's not that. It's not defeat. It's not victory. There's no war. There's the sound of singing. There's something else going on. They're having some kind of party down there. This is not war, okay? It came about, verse 19, it came about as soon as Moses came near the camp that he saw the calf and the dancing. Now here they were. They were not, you know, Moses was right. Joshua heard something, but he didn't hear it right. Moses was right, and Moses' anger burned. He saw this golden calf. He saw them dancing, reveling. They're all out there with, you know, and he threw the tablets from his hands and shattered them at the foot of the mountain. He took the calf that they had made and burned it with fire and ground it to powder and scattered it over the surface of the water and made the sons of Israel drink it. Powder that gold calf, you drink it. Now, maybe Joshua didn't hear too well, okay? He didn't hear exactly, but he did hear. He heard enough to know that the sound was not a good sound. He said it was a sound of war. Something's wrong. He knew it wasn't a good sound. He could tell that. Moses said, no, it's not the sound of defeat. It's not the sound of victory. There's something else going on. I hear the sound of music. But what Joshua heard wasn't good. He knew it wasn't good. And you know, we have to be able to hear. We have to be able to hear. When we hear, we have to be able to know what's good, what's not good. We have to be able to hear the words of God, the things of God. We have to have a discernment for what's good, what's not good. You know, Jesus said this in the book of John, chapter 10, dropping down to verse 25. Jesus answered them and said, "I told you and you do not believe me. The works that I do in my Father's name, these testify of me. But you do not believe because you are not of my sheep. My sheep hear my voice, and I know them, and they follow me. And I give eternal life to them, and they will never perish, and no one will snatch them out of my hand." That's John chapter 10, verses 25 through 28. From the New American Standard Version. So here's Joshua. He could hear. He knew it wasn't right. He wasn't sure what it was, but he said, "I think it's the war." Moses said, "No." Moses' ears were better at picking out, but Joshua knew something was wrong there in the camp. Now Joshua had a tremendous amount of piety, what he called religious holiness and reverence to God, tremendous amount. Here you have this little story. I'm reading from the New International Version. This is Exodus chapter 33, beginning in verse 7. Exodus 33. Now Moses used to take a tent and pitch it outside the camp some distance away, calling it the tent of meeting. Okay, Moses had what is called the tent of meeting. That's where Moses met with God when there came something for wisdom. He had to meet with God. What do we do about this problem? What do we do? The tent of meeting. Anyone inquiring of the Eternal would go to the tent of meeting. outside the camp. Now, this was not in the camp. This is outside the camp. And whenever Moses went to the tent, all the people rose and stood at the entrance of their tents, watching Moses until he entered the tent. As Moses went into the tent, the pillar of cloud would come down and stay at the entrance of the tent. That signified that God was meeting with Moses in the tent while the Eternal spoke with Moses. Whenever the people saw the pillar of cloud standing at the entrance of the tent, they all stood and worshiped. I mean, that pillar of cloud meant that was God coming there, each at the entrance of his tent. So they all came out and looked at that pillar of cloud and worshiped, because it was outside the camp. The Eternal would speak to Moses face to face, as a man speaks with his friend. Imagine that. You know how great Moses was, right? Speaking face to face with Moses. Then Moses would return to the camp. Moses then, after he spoke with the Eternal, would go. He went back to the camp. But listen to that last part of verse 11. This is Exodus chapter 33, verse 11. But Joshua, his aide, his servant Joshua, did not leave the tent. When Moses left, Joshua didn't leave. What did Joshua do? I'm going to stay where God was, where God was, where God is. I'm staying in this tent. This place is holy. And Joshua evidently had a tremendous feeling for holiness, the tremendous feeling for God. He stayed in the tent. You would think he would run right away, but he didn't. He stayed in the tent because God had been there. So he, tremendous feeling of worship and awe and glory to God he had in his heart. You know, every one of us has a hero in life. You know, everybody, you know, when you're a kid, did you have a hero? You can find out a lot about people who have heroes. Who's your hero? Who's the person you look to? Who's the person that you feel that you're drawn to? And that's the person that he's your champion, so to speak. Joshua had a hero. You know who it was? It was Moses. Let me show you a little bit here. Here's a little passage from the book of Numbers, chapter 11. This is from the New American Standard Version, Numbers chapter 11, verse 24, beginning in verse 24. So Moses went out and told the people the words of the Lord, the Eternal. Also, he gathered 70 men of the elders of the people and stationed them around the tent. Now, they're trying to organize all this area. Then the Lord came down in a cloud and spoke to him, and he took the spirit who was upon him and placed it upon the 70 elders. And when the spirit rested on them, they prophesied, but they did not do it again. But two men who had remained in the camp, the name of one was Eldad and the name of the other was Medad. And the spirit rested upon them. Now they were among those who had been registered, but had not gone out of the tent. They prophesied in the camp. Now, they just kept going. The Spirit had come on them. They kept... Now, prophesying doesn't mean they were predicting the future. Prophesying means they were speaking forth with inspired speaking, so to speak, inspired utterances. So they began speaking in the tent. Verse 28, then Joshua, the son of Nun, the attendant to Moses, the servant of Moses, from his youth... He was with Moses from the time he was young. He was much younger than Moses. He was a servant of Moses from the time he was young. And Moses, he says, Moses, my Lord, stop them. Restrain those guys from speaking. You're the one that's supposed to be speaking the words of God. And these guys are speaking the words of God. Stop them. But Moses said to him, are you jealous for my sake? Yeah, That's exactly what he was. Are you jealous for my sake? Yes, you're my hero, Moses. I don't want anybody else to be doing this. You're the guy that should be speaking all the words of God. You're the guy that should be prophesying. You're the guy should be speaking from the utterance of the Spirit. Nobody else should be doing it. That's how Joshua felt. Moses said to him, are you jealous for my sake? Would that all the Lord's people were prophets, that the Lord would put his Spirit upon all of them. I wish God, you know, they all had the Spirit of God. Then Moses returned to the camp, both he and the elders of Israel. So you could see Joshua sort of had Moses as his hero. Well, you can't do much better than that, you know, in that time. Have Moses as your hero rather than maybe one of the rebellion people, you know, that Korah, Dathan, and Abiram, those guys who rebelled against Moses, you couldn't do much better than that. But think about it. Who our heroes are says a lot about who we are. Okay? Who are heroes? The people that you look to, whose example, whose way you look to, says a lot about you. Unfortunately, in today's world, so many people pick dimwits as heroes, immoral people as heroes, hateful people, cruel people. Who do you think ISIS wants these young Arab kids to look to? They want to look to this cruelty and I stab you and I kill you and I behead you, and that's who, we're your heroes. Look to us. What does that say about them? Joshua's hero said a lot about him. You know, from early times, Joshua was an outstanding person. You know, when they were going to go into the land, you remember that they were going to send these spies into the land, okay? Well, they had to choose these spies from the various tribes. Okay, they're going to send these spies into the land. So in the book of Numbers, chapter 13, you read, send out for yourself men so that they may spy out the land of Canaan, which I'm going to give to the sons of Israel. This is Numbers, chapter 13, verses 2 and 3. You shall send a man from each of their father's tribes. Every one is a leader among them. So each tribe, you know, you're going to pick up one of the most outstanding leaders, the most outstanding leader of that tribe. Dropping down to verse, I won't read all that passage, but dropping down to verse 7. From the tribe of Issachar, Egal, the son of Joseph, came. From the tribe of Ephraim, Hoshea, the son of Nun. That's what he was originally called, you know. His name was Hoshea first, and that just meant salvation. Moses changed it to Jehoshea, and which meant the eternal, and it was shortened to Joshua, which meant the eternal salvation. The eternal is salvation. Hoshea, the son of Nun. And from the tribe of Benjamin, Palti, the son of Raphu, and so on. Caleb came from a tribe. And so these were outstanding men. Joshua was one of the leaders, early leaders. Now, his whole family seemed to be in leader. He came from a very good family, came from a prominent family, came from an outstanding family of people with a good record. Look at the book of Numbers, chapter 10 now. We'll drop back for a little bit. Each tribe had a standard. They had a flag. They had some kind of standard. It could have been maybe not a flag. It could have been some kind of figure. You know, it could have been a star. It could have been this. Could have been that. Each tribe, and some of them had the face of a lion. Some of them had, like Judah, had like the lion. You had other tribes that had this or that, the face of different things. They were centered, and each four tribes, if you had in the Bible, if you read the book of Numbers chapter 2, you'll see it. You had the temple of God here, God's tent, the big tent here. around the tent, you had four tribes here, three tribes here. You had the 12 tribes, four times three, on every side of the tent. The standard that went from these, each tribe had a standard, but the standard of this side, you know, the north side, the south side, the east side, were various different tribes. And it was almost like the throne of God in heaven. You know, when the throne of God in heaven, you know what you have? You have the four cherubim, one with the face of a lion, one with the face of a man, right? And one with the face of an ox, and so on. And so you have these four cherubim surrounding the temple. You had the four different sections, and the leading standard was the four faces around the temple of God. Okay, I won't take a lot of time to go through that. Okay, so now you see in chapter 10, verse 22, next, the standard of the camp of the sons of Ephraim according to their armies was set out with Elishama, the son of Amminadab, over its army. Now, Elishama, who was the son of Amminadab, over its army. Who was Elishama? Who was Elishama? Well, look at 1 Chronicles chapter 7. Dropping down to verse 27. Laden, his son, Amminadab, his son, Elishama, his son, Nun, his son, and Joshua, his son. Who was Elishama? He was Joshua's granddad. He was Joshua's granddad. And he had a rather high position. He had an outstanding position among the armies of Israel in that time. He was in the tribe of Ephraim. He was Joshua's grandfather. And he was part of the ones that ran the standard for the armies that came from Ephraim. So, you know, he must have set a very good example. Set a good example for his father, Nun. Remember, Joshua was the son of Nun. Elishama was the father of Nun. And Joshua was the son of Nun. Many people, you know, that get in high positions often do not set a good example. They often set bad examples. We have people in government. We have people who are considered leaders. We have people who are, and some of them are immoral. Some of them are unjust. Some of them are liars. Some of them are this or that. And these are the kind of examples that we often get for us and for our kids. We have outstanding, quote, outstanding movie stars. We have outstanding rock stars. And we have all these. And what kind of example do they set? We hear it all the time, in and out of marriages, in and out of drugs, in and out of this, and in and out of that. You know, in the book of Matthew, chapter 23, Jesus sort of condemned them. In Matthew, chapter 23, beginning in verse 2, the scribes and Pharisees, he said, seated themselves in the chair of Moses. Therefore, all that they tell you, do and observe, but don't do according to their deeds. Don't do what they do, for they say things, but they do not do them. They say often the right thing, but they don't do it. Don't follow their example, Jesus is telling his disciples. Don't follow their example. Do you and I have the character to survive a high position? Let's say you had a high position. What would you do? What kind of example? You know, we all have high positions. If you've ever had kids, you've had a high position. If you've ever been around kids, you've had a high position. If you've ever watched kids, you've had a high position. Kids look to you. What kind of example did you set? What kind of character did you show them? We have to set that kind of example for the kids and the people around us. Now, Joshua was the kind of guy who had not only, you know, these talents, these abilities, you know, he had to do two major things when he went into the land. Number one, he was a soldier. He had to conquer the land. That's what he had to do. Number two, he had to apportion the land to different tribes. Now think about that. You people can have here, Ephraim is going to have here, Judah is going to have here. Now the Levites are not going to get any place because they're going to receive the tithes. And they're not going to get a land of their own. But this one's going to here, Issachar is going to be here, this one's going to be here, Judah's going to be here, this one's going to be here. And all these various, Gad is going to be here, Naphtali, Zebulun, all these various tribes are going to be in this place. And he was the one that designated their lot, what they were going to do. Can you imagine? So he had to be not only a great soldier, but he had to be a great statesman, administrator, negotiator, and helping them so they don't get all upset. But he also was a man who could stand alone, who could stand against a crowd. Here you have this statement in the book of Numbers, chapter 13. Now, you know what happened when they sent in, remember, he was one of the ones chosen. Each, these tribes had to pull out their men. They're going to send these representatives, the leader of each tribe, send representatives into the land to spy it out, to see what it's like, and bring back a report to give the Israelites a lot of courage. That was the first generation coming out of Egypt. They went in. And what happened? In chapter 13 of the book of Numbers, so they gave out, for the most part, they gave out to the sons of Israel a bad report of the land, which they had spied out, saying, "The land through which we have gone in spying it out is a land that devours its inhabitants. And all the people whom we saw in it are men of great size." Now listen to that contradictory statement, okay? Listen to how ridiculous that statement was. This is a land that devours its inhabitants, but the people there are really big. Well, how did the people get so big if this land devours everybody? You know, you have these giants that are surviving in this land. It was a total contradiction. This is how a lot of people think, and they think emotionally. They don't think logically. They don't think with their head. They think emotionally. So they said a contradictory thing right there to the people. And you know that those people didn't even question that contradictory thing. They just heard it emotionally. They heard the fear. This is a land that devours its inhabitants. Besides which, these people that inhabit that land are really big. Oh my. And we're scared to death now. We can't fight them. So this is what they say. There are also Nephilim, the sons of Anak, is part of the Nephilim. And we became like grasshoppers in their sight. So we were... That's how we felt in their sight. We were just like puny little ants, you know. They were just huge. And there are these guys, well, we can't fight them. This land is terrible. And so we shouldn't even go in there. So what happened? Most of the people, all of the spies that went in, come back to their tribes and say that report. Only two men that came back had a different report. Dropping down to chapter 14 of Numbers, dropping down to verse 6. Joshua, the son of Nun, and Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, of those who had spied out the land, tore their clothes when the people said, "We're not going in." They tore their clothes. No, not here. And they spoke to all the congregation of the sons of Israel, saying, "The land which we passed through to spy out is an exceedingly great land. It's a good land. And then they said something else. If the Eternal is pleased with us, then he will bring us into the land and give it to us. A land which flows with milk and honey. Only do not rebel against the Eternal, and do not fear the people of the land, for they will be our prey. Their protection has been removed from them, and the Eternal is with us. Do not fear them. Now here they are pleading with this congregation, okay? Two of the 12 tribes, two men, two tribes, are getting a good report. The other 10 tribes get a bad report. But all the congregation said, let's stone them with stones. Now, I don't even think they had the support of their own tribes. I don't think they had enough support. Because you know how people say, oh, yeah, well, our people said it was really bad. You know how negativity out-trumps positive? Negativity outweighs the positive. I want to hear negative. Negative appeals to our lower nature, the fear, the negative feelings we have. Think of something you want to do and feel. Think of how negative you start. There's a little buzz in the back of your mind. If you want to start a business, you start all the negatives right away. We have negatives. We have negatives. We all do. So their protection has been removed, but all the congregation said, stone them with stones. And the only thing that saved them, then the glory of the Eternal appeared in the tent of meeting to all the sons of Israel. All the sons of Israel. So here they were, these two guys, Joshua and Caleb, standing up to the congregation, never giving back, never flinching. And then you see it here. Later in the book of Numbers, you'll see the steadfast summed up as follows. In Numbers chapter 32, verse 12, Caleb and Joshua have wholly followed the Eternal. That's a statement. Numbers chapter 32, verse 12. Caleb and Joshua have wholly, means completely followed the Eternal. They did not give in. Let's go back to chapter 14 of the book of Numbers. Let's go back there. God comes down. The glory of the Eternal comes down, right? And so you see it in verse 11. The glory of the Eternal appeared in the tent of meeting and the sons of Israel and so on. And then chapter 14, dropping down to verse 28. As I live, says the Eternal, just as you have spoken in my hearing, so I will surely do to you. Your corpses will fall in the wilderness, even your numbered men, according to your complete number from 20 years old and older, 20 years old and upward, who have grumbled against me. Surely you shall not come into this land which I swore to settle you, except Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, and Joshua, the son of Nun. Now think of how many Israelites left Egypt. Think of how many people left Egypt. None of them, except two men, maybe and their wives and kids, Joshua and Caleb. Those are the only two going into the land. None of you are going. Your children, verse 31, God says, your children, however, whom you said would become a prey, because that's what they said, you know, we can't go in there, they'll kill our families, they'll kill us. I will bring them in, and they will know the land which you have rejected. But as for you, your corpses will fall in the wilderness, your sons will be shepherds for 40 years in the wilderness. They will suffer for your unfaithfulness and until your corpses lie in the wilderness. You're going to all die. Once all of you are gone, I'll take your kids in under two men, Joshua and Caleb. They are the ones. So Think about also, you know, Joshua was telling them, it's a land flowing with milk and honey. Now think about what those two statements mean. If you have milk, what do you have? You must have enough vegetation for sheep and goats and cattle. Mostly goats and sheep. No, they didn't take much cattle. Goats and sheep to go with there and eat. So you have milk. If you have honey, what does that tell you? You got a lot of bees around on the flowers. That means if you plant fruit trees, if you plant things, they will be pollinized. They will have pollen because the bees will pollinize all these and make sure that they're all inspired to get more fruit and all this. You have honey and milk. It's a great land, a land flowing. It's not just has a few pieces of milk and honey. It's flowing with it. It's a great land. It can produce lots of things good for health and nutrition. Now, God let Joshua live a long time. You'll see that. Joshua's longevity is a testimony, in this case, to his godliness. Now, I know that just getting old doesn't necessarily mean that you're godly, okay? And dying young doesn't necessarily mean that you are ungodly. We know that. But in Joshua's case, age was, for him, a living testimony to his obedience to God in the face of the denial of the Israelites. And his seniority became a part of his sanctified living. You know, he became an example to all these younger kids. He was older. He lived to be a ripe old age because he was, you know, much younger than Moses, but he was much older than all these kids that went into the land. And he lived a long time. He was a great example to these people. And, we, you know, we all, as we get older, you and I have to ask ourselves, what kind of example are we to young people? What kind of example are we to the younger people, to kids, to teenagers, to younger people, to 20 years old and 30 year olds and so on? What kind of example as we get into our 60s and 70s and 80s, what example are we? Joshua was evidently a great example. We want to be a strong example, a mature example of faith. Not just a cranky old person that just I'm angry because I'm getting old and I'm cranky because I hurt and I'm mad at everybody and I don't like young people because they remind me that I'm getting old. We can't be like that. We have to be mature and setting a good example. It's a kind of an interesting thing. You would think, wouldn't you, that the guy who would naturally be, you know, I mean, he was with Moses from his youth. He was attendant to Moses, stayed with Moses. He was there with Moses. He was faithful. He took the care of the Amalekites. He fought. You would think that Joshua would be the guy Moses would say, you know, here's the guy that's going to lead Israel into the land of promise. Here's the guy that's going to take my place. You would think that, wouldn't you? That didn't happen like that. You'll find out in our next sermon how Joshua got chosen to go into the land of Israel, the promised land. But it wasn't because Moses picked him out, even after all his valor. It's a strange little circumstance. We'll talk about that and much more about the life of Joshua in our next sermon.